Cast on this 18th of December 2019 from the Lucy Coleman studio in Los Angeles, California, United States of America, God's good, great planet Earth, chaos and order. Look at this. Chaos and alignment. How do you reconcile the two? You can't do it. You can't do it. Is there any hope? I think that the only hope that is left for me, which I found in my heart of hearts, is to stay very close to the thing that I'm sure of and to stay away from those things that are not familiar to me, especially if those things have a tendency to tear at your inner being or the spiritual part of you. I'm going to be given today, instead of addressing the turmoil of chaos, I'm going to address the other end of the spectrum, a way out of hope. I'm going to share with you for the next, for a while. I started this a while back, and I think I'm going to start it this time and complete it, because it's about the best thing that I can offer. And the reason why, I had a friend of mine over. I'm always having them over, aren't I? And he attempted to teach me something about the scriptures. And I'm always willing to hear what a person that reads his Bible sometimes think of the Bible. So I encouraged him to teach me something. And he was pushing the idea on me that regardless of what happens to me in this life, that I, of all people, was to continue to manifest a spirit of forgiveness, understanding, and supreme logic as I give in to the other person's point of view. Now, I thought about this when he told me that, or suggested that to me, that if I did something as ridiculous as that I would forfeit me being who I am, that I would have to do it in order, listen to this, to make him happy. And, I just kind of dawned on me. I've been a couple of days because I'm trying to think about where does this place come from in the world that everybody has to be happy? It has never happened. It has never happened in anyone's lifetime. Tsunamis will come. It's not going to make you happy. You're going to drown. You're going to see your whole village wiped away. Volcanoes may come. The hot lava burns down everything that man could build. There will be that. But I want to share with you a collection of moral and philosophical, I call them moral and philosophical maxims, of a wide range of subjects. And I'm going to present this to you in poetic form. And if those of you have studied any other culture, any other kind of books or anything like that, you know that the Hebrew culture, and I'm talking about the ancient Hebrews, not just of Jerusalem over there now, I'm talking about the ancient of ancient Hebrews, comes from a very poetic culture. You can see it in some of the things that these people have been doing in their lives for thousands of years. I'm going to set forth the philosophy of practical life in my next few webcast, practical life, because I think that if I attempt to take you any further than what is practical, it will confuse you. And I feel on compulsion to do this now because I'm feeling physically within me a little different than I did a few weeks ago. And if it persists, it's given me the positive signs that I need to undertake. So I have to get this out so that you can hear me. All right. The only thing that God has given me that makes any sense in my life is a voice and this computer to talk into whenever I get my head right and do that. Keep watch on the water. Keep watch on the what?
The water is turning really low. Do you keep watch? And I'm going to drop back up. Okay.
All right, I'll do that. I was given a few kitchen duties. All right, and so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some, you know, I don't think that practical life is anti-Bible. No, I don't think that, because I think that the Bible doesn't despise common sense and discretion. And that's what I'll be talking about. Common sense and discretion. It is my attempt to say that many people today, not only young people, middle-aged and older people, do not use common sense and discretion when doing practically any damn thing. And because of that, our lives are challenged by what can mean the best for us as opposed to that which is not necessarily the best of us. So I want to talk about that. You will hear me speak of an absence of what's going on in the world around me today. There's a term that I used to use when I was in the church with a friend of mine. The world is the world is the world, meaning that it's going to be what it has to be. Let me give you another reason why I'm thinking about doing this. I was fortunate enough to come upon a copy of my wife's eulogy, a videotape that I performed service, and I watched the tape very closely, and I saw certain people that were at this funeral because it was filmed, not only the service itself, but the internment at the park where they put dead bodies. And then it continued at my house as I invited everyone to come by the house for some chow, for some food. And my house is packed, backyard, front yard, house, everything. I'll never forget the love that I experienced. But what I did experience as I watched this DVD was certain people that were there that are now today speaking very negative of me. And I cannot understand this. There was one guy on the tape. He was a Jewish fellow. I know him. He's kind of like suffering with illness in his body too. He was there with his daughter. And he mentioned on the family tape that I performed a wedding in his backyard of his daughter and his now son-in-law. And they were Jewish. And it was a wedding ceremony that I, a Protestant minister, performed. And they were well pleased. Why were they well pleased? Because I had an opportunity to leave the chaos of the differences between us, the differences in what we believed, even believed about God, even how to approach God. We left those differences off, and it was a wonderful event. Now, I can't help but to think about the current news on the scene of a black man and a black woman killing the Jewish people in the New Jersey area, and that police officer who had 5 children lost his life, and to discover that the killers were 2 African-American people that belong to an estranged religious group. And I'm not going to talk about the group, because if they hear this, they'll probably send somebody over to shoot me with a shotgun. This is what we've come to in our community? Is this is how we disagree with other people religiously? They did us how we know better than the people that we call heathens and demon led people, when you see these kind of sad atrocities taking place all around us? I'm telling you, man, the world is full of chaos. And so what I thought that I'd do is I thought that I'd take a lot of God's time and not too much of yours, because if you don't like the way these studies will be going for the next few, I don't know how long. I really hope I can do them for the rest of my life. Hope I can die, get carried out doing this. May be very good for me. Something to give great thought to. Spirituality is changing universally all around us. I was having a conversation with someone, and they were mentioning to me that the faith that I was raised in, Christianity, doesn't seem to be able to hold the day. And they were absolutely correct. I mean, when you see people on a tape that's asking questions whether you're still alive and yet they were assisting in carrying your wife's coffin and put you on pause. A tremendous pause. What I'm mentioning to you is what I witnessed. And I got to tell you what was on this thing. If you attended my wife's death celebration, I guess you can call it that, everyone that came up to the coffin to see her body received a full body hug from me and a warm embrace on their cheek, whether male or female. I watched a tape. I saw it. I sat in awe here at my house watching that, and I said to myself, what kind of man was that? I'll tell you what kind of man that is. It's a man that's full of God's love and forgiveness. But man, these many years afterwards, people still wanting for my death? I wonder, it's no wonder that we go to other religions besides Christianity. Christianity has showed itself to be the most hypocritical religious faith that I've ever encountered. I've never been a member of any other religion, but this one has shown me the heights and the depths of hypocrisy. I'll tell you what. Yesterday I looked at about a 30-minute clip on an ABC affiliate network of the officer's funeral in Jersey. Why was I sitting here at my computer screen crying while I watch police officers in their dress blue uniform standing out in the pouring rain in front of the church? Every officer on the department, through every deployment, every watch, from mid watch, from morning watch to day watch, all of them attended the funeral. Obviously, the commander was in the church, and they stood up at attention in the rain for this one fallen cop. I thought about it. I said, what was it about that cop's life that caused, wait a minute, other men on other police departments to come into their county and do the police work while their whole department attended one man's funeral? Now that to me is a powerful statement about that man's life. Damn it, I'm tired of it. When a man does right, everybody knows it. Now I know you want to fuss with me, but wait a minute. And I'll be sharing with you as I go through this study some of these verses here, because when I read my Bible and I see acts of bravery and beauty from men to help a society, I'm brought to tears. I'm not crying when a rapper gets shot because he's out there trying to compete with somebody's lifestyle. When a rapper gets shot, I say, well, what did he say that brought about all this mayhem? Sometimes I'm criticized for that. But here, a man for 15 years gets up every morning and he goes to work with the purpose of, no, not killing black men. So those of you that think that all cops want to kill all black men, no, I saw some black men standing out in that rain too. And for those of you that say, well, if he was a black man with the cop's uniform, then he can KMA. Well, I know what you are. You're like the two persons that went to shoot up the delicatessen store and then shot the cop when he came doing the duty that he was paid to do. I know who you are. And you know what? There are people in the world like that. And my religion tells me that I'm supposed to cherish and love these people when they continuously do the most distraughtful things that a human being could do. I've been dazed before coming on because I didn't want to share how I've been feeling with you. And this stuff is affecting my heart. I see this stuff. And I had to be careful because my heart is not as strong as it used to be. Though some may listen to this and say, drop dead, John Coleman. So let me get it out for you right. Now listen, since I'm going to be a good man and I'm going to take you through this, But we're going to start at the beginning, or I may switch around. I think it's important for me to talk you through Proverbs chapter 3. I want to start there because there's something very interesting that I find here. Now, we understand, let me continue to give an introduction to this. Okay, the whole strength of the Hebrew language, if you speak it, read it, or do anything with it, is of sacred authority of the book and the homily truths. In other words, the authority of the speaker speaking as a patriarch to his children. Okay? And it's given through homiletical truths, the way the artist put it together beautifully, artistically, in his own styles. It deals also with a refined, discriminating, careful view of the finer shades of human character, so often overlooked by everybody. Looking at things like that policeman with the five children and his funeral. That's the finest things of Jersey City, of the United States, when you could get hundreds of men standing at attention in a rainstorm being soaked to pay homage to a fallen brother. Now, when I think of me being the pastor to a congregation, or wanting them to ask if I was still alive, then you have to look at the worthiness of the institution that I spend most of my life in, wasting my damn time. Now, you understand my drift as you go through this with me, and I pray that God gives me strength till I drop dead, because I would pray that you would never be deceived on the level of my deception. Also, as to the origin of this book of Proverbs, it is probable that Solomon gathered and recast many of the proverbs that you may hear me speak about, which sprang from human experience in the preceding ages, as well as the ones that are material to his own experience. So Solomon looks at men prior to his time. And so we should look at our times right now and see what man has gravitated to, what he has gravitated to. Now, the book is usually divided into three parts. First part consists of chapters 1 through 9, which contain the exhibition of wisdom as the highest good. Wisdom is the highest good. That's what chapters 1 through 9 is. And if you go to chapter 10, verse 24, it gives you a brief glimpse at this wisdom being the highest good. Let me see whether I got that right. I want to make sure that I go 10 and 24. It says right here. Yeah, here it is. 10 and 24. What the wicked fears will come upon them, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. And so you see, there is this contrast between what wicked people do and what righteous people do. Now, I got to check the fire. So I'll be back in a second. This, puts us back on track here. The water's doing well. But that's kind of when I get into this. What I like to do is I want you to look at with me Proverbs chapter 3. All right? And I'll be jumping around in this book, but I'm going to share this with you. And I think it's important to, to go here because of the misconceptions that a lot of people have, not only about reading this book called the Bible, that Christians are supposed to hail as the one of the highest resources for our moral diligence in this life, and I don't have anything against it. I have many Bibles in my home, but I think that, oh my goodness, my everything is falling apart. My glasses just fell apart here. It just came right off. And I don't know what happened. I'm going to have to get that fixed, surely. But anyhow, Let me give it to you this way. Let me see if I can, I can still wear them somewhat. It says, "My son, do not forget my teaching." A man was by hope earlier, and I asked him who the person was speaking and who is he speaking to. I found it interesting that he couldn't answer the question. Watch it. "My son," and so I explained to him, this is as a father would speak to a son, as a parent would speak to their children, as an older mentor would speak to a protege, someone speaking to someone because they want that someone to get some very important life skills as they grow up. This is also from a person that loved the person that they're speaking with. If the person did not love them, and why is he trying to take them out of chaos? Why is he speaking to them like this? What is the inevitable lesson that he is trying to levy on them? "My son, do not forget my teaching." That's a powerful, powerful statement. The meaningful task of remembering. That's what verse 1 is talking about. There's a task. We need to remember what good people have taught us. We first of all note whose teaching the young man was called to listen to. He didn't suggest that he listens to political leaders, to religious leaders, to asinine individuals that will get him screwed up. I won't go into the detail, but I had an incident take place right in my front yard, literally. Where I was telling some people how to behave, and after the incident was over, they said, "You are absolutely right in everything that you said, and I couldn't see it." I said, "It's because you got a seer talking to you. I know how to live." And so when it says, "My son, do not forget my teaching," we also note here the teachings were supposed to be found, where the teachings were to be found. When anything, listen, when something is only found in the head, it can be forgotten. So he wasn't talking about don't forget his teachings in terms of remembering in your head. Remember the teaching with your life. We have a lot of people that live their lives by their own discretion, doing foolish things, saying foolish things. And thinking that, wait a minute, I want to share something with you here so that you see where I'm coming from. When something is in the heart, the result is far different from it just being in your head. See, because the man that was trying to teach me the scripture this morning in my house was trying to teach me something from his head. And I said, no. Number one, that's not what that text teaches. And so let me give you a good indication of what I'm talking about. I'd like you to go with me to Jeremiah chapter 32, verse 40. Jeremiah chapter 32, verse 40. And then you get my drift. I think that'll make it plain enough for you. Here we go. It's a very long chapter. Verse 40 says, "And I will make an everlasting covenant with them, that I will not turn away from them to do them good. And I will put the fear of me," look at this, "the fear of me in their hearts so that they will not turn away from me." Now, this is great text because a lot of people ask me today, even since I've retired from being a pastor, "Well, so you don't abide by the Christian standard." I say, "Oh no, man, I'm still scared to death of God." Because when God first came to me, when I was 23 years old, he put the fear of God in me. I'm afraid of displeasing that entity. I ain't thinking about, hey, those of you that think you can cuss God and get away with it, you know what? I can't even prove that there's a God that exists. But I would never take chance with my eternal soul and curse the Creator and think that I'm going to get away with it because I'm who I am. That's asinine. And that's a darn good verse that takes you right there. That's Jeremiah 32 and 40. This is God speaking to man. I'm making a lifelong covenant with them. And I will not turn away from them, God says. God says, I'm not going to turn away from you. And he says, to do them good. In other words, he says, that's why I'm not turning from you, because I want to do you well. And then he says, and I will put the fear of me in their hearts. Now, if this hasn't happened to you, you don't know God like I know him. All right, so we got that understood. See, because a lot of people, I read this and that's what this means. It doesn't necessarily mean that. And remember, you're talking with a man that his whole professional life has been, you know, in this book. In this book. That's why I can come in my office, even, you know, not feeling very well today. And I'm not trying to do this so I'd feel well. God knows he could take me any minute of the day that, you know, I'm happy. I'm ready. I agree with his estimate of me. It's time to get up out of here. Oh, yes, my friend. And you should relish in that fact. All right, let's keep on going here. Let's keep on going. This is good. I'm loving it. Look at here. And I will put the fear of me in their hearts so that they will not turn away from me. That's a powerful verse. Look at Psalms chapter 4, verse 4. You got a pen. Mark it down somewhere. Psalms chapter 4, verse 4 says, tremble and do not sin. Meditate in your heart upon your bed and be still. Did you hear what God said? He said, you doing what? I tremble when I, because the way God can get back at you, man never could. Thus we know from these two verses, 1 and 2. Okay. In Proverbs chapter 3, listen, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. And then he says in verse 2, for length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Now let me go to verse 2 a little bit. We're going to come back to it. And let's read it. If you do not forget the right teachings that you've received as a human being, and if you keep the commandments of God and of a good parent, good counseling in your heart, this is what God promises you in verse 2. For length of days. Now, how many hours is in a day? 24, right? Right. What has your last 24-hour day been like? Because that's how you can weigh whether your length of days is worth the living. What were the last 24 hours of your day like? Now, think about people that die while they're in chaos with themselves and God and other people and die in a chaotic manner. And when God asked them, what was the length of your 24 hours? And then he says, and of days and years of life. Length of days and years of life. You know what years of life mean? Following God, keeping his commandments, doing what's right, listening to old school will give you long life. Real long life. That's what he promised you. Look at verse 3. Look what he says in verse 3. No, we didn't finish verse 2. And it says, and peace they will add to you. In other words, for those length of days and years of life, it will be full of peace. I'm 75, and I'm telling you, that's what it was. Never had to think even now. These days, since my wife is gone and I'm resigned as a pastor, I have had to pick up my gun a little bit too many times that I thought I had to, because I'm looking at who and what is out here in this damn environment that I'm living in, and I'm telling you that people have undergone a metamorphosis as to exercising some kind of Christian faith. I don't think that they know how. I don't even think that it's possible for them to do that. The New Age movement inspired a sense of dread in many conservative Christians. This fear stemmed from the conviction that something evil and sinister surrounded this movement, and that ominous clouds were on the spiritual horizon. In the 90s, the backlash went away, and most Christians forgot or ignored what seemed so threatening a few years earlier. But the movement has not gone away. As a matter of fact, it is much with us today, and many Christians are very surprised and shocked and bewildered. I'm telling you that we're living right on the threshold of days that don't look promising. 1 Timothy 4:1 ought to bring to you the truth of this matter, if you really read it and understand what you're reading. And many of the evidences of the abandonment of this faith can be seen as we speak. I just have to abandon myself from people that are not real. I couldn't stand to be around them much longer. Many of these professing themselves as believers are susceptible to deceiving thoughts and ideas. But who are these? Are they the nominal, carnal people that's chasing after the world? And how can you recognize the true teachings? Well, that's why I hope that you get a kick out of coming to my website. Because in this study, we're going to investigate that question. And we're going to investigate it very closely. So, how do we discern whether we're following the right thing or the wrong thing? Well, we got to examine a multitude of influences of this very age and teaching. What are you coming through? What are you coming out of? How do you think about your life? That's what I want you to do. Spend this time with me as I take you through it. Now, let's go back to Proverbs. And I think it's good to go back here because as we do, we are taking a kind of a surveying look at this issue that we're facing. So, we know that these two verses, Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, that the heart is not only the seat of all human affections, but also a serious place from which all attitudes and dispositions take place. You've heard me over the years, over the months, over the weeks on this website tell you, and you've even heard guests in the studio giving us their opinion as to how and why they do life the way they do it. If anyone plans to conform to the standard of God's divine word, well, this has to take place in your heart and not in your head. That's what I want you to know. Heart service is what God demands from those that really love him. We also note that in verse 1b, that the person who is wise keeps God's commandments. That's how come I don't understand people, especially these young people that think that they're wise and they're adamantly coming against the commandment of God because they believe as an estranged New Ager would think that there is no God. There are no deities that we must give reverence to. And the only person that you can blame for that would be their parents. Because the parents has the obligation to teach the children by example of heart. The results of remembering. Look at verses 2 through 4. The verse speaks for itself. Let's see if all of us can make sense of this as we analyze this. Look at this. We note the aspect of lasting peace which comes if you do this. Which most people in this modern age do not have. They don't have a lasting peace, and peace they will add to you. People are frustrated. People are nervous. People are anxious. People are, oh my, different. Look at verse 3. Do not let kindness and truth leave you? Man, look at this. If I retain this attitude of kindness and truth and attain the teachings, then your disposition is now challenged. My behavior is radically transformed. A lot of people ask me, why are you so kind and why do you help people? Because it says, don't let kindness and truth leave you, John. I was looking at the funeral of my wife, and every single person that came up to the coffin got a hug, and we were cheek to cheek, men and women. That's kindness and truth. Kindness and truth. Check it out, people. Somebody told me, I've never heard of a pastor doing his own wife's eulogy. No, you have to see it. I will try to put this whole thing up on my YouTube page. I have to find somebody that knows how to do that through this. It's a long deal. But if I put it up, have the sound check clear and clean up the audio, this will be a masterpiece to show people how funerals should be. So nobody was crying. Nobody. Because I told him, if you truly love the person, you don't come and make a fool of yourself when you grieve openly. Grieve at home and then come and pay your respects. And I invited the whole funeral party over to my house for dinner. You've got to see it to believe it. You don't see that now. You don't see that kind of favor that anybody gives anybody these days. It's all disappearing. All disappearing. But let's continue with this because this is wonderful. If I keep the attitudes of the teaching, oh my goodness. Notice the reference to the heart again, please. And do you see the implication? In Proverbs chapter 4 and let's just look at verse 4. By keeping these commandments, not only God will be happy, but man, sinner or saint, can benefit from your godly behavior. What this verse is saying right here is that if you allow these commandments to stay with you, okay, you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Now, what this is saying is that when ill treatment comes your way and you respond in the right, positive way, favor will come your way. Let me share with you a little bit of an incident. It was an incident, and it was involved where I had to call the police once. And when I called the police, one individual said, oh no, whenever the police is called around me, it usually turns out to be something horrible. And I said, when I called the police, I'm calling the police not because I want something horrible to happen. I want to see if the police are going to do what the police are paid to do. You see, because the police are paid to, and I've seen enough on my computer screens in the past 2 or 3 years to question how some of these officers even get a job by how they treat some of the citizens. Well, I paid the police to look at justice. I had to call them and I said, you need to come over here to my place. I said, before I handle the business that you're supposed to handle. And when the police came, I have to tell you something. I was the one that called the police. I'm the one that started the whole thing. They didn't even ask to see anything of me. But they were asking of everyone else. Why is that? Why didn't they ask of me? Because of this verse right here. Because it says, length of days and years of life and peace, John, wisdom will add to you. Do not let kindness and truth leave you, John. Bind them around your neck, John, like a necklace. Write them on the tablets of your heart, John, like it's really a part of your life, so that you will find favor, John, and good repute in the sight of your God, Jehovah Yahweh, Elohim, and man. And a young man asked me, and he said, you know, I've never seen it like this. How did this happen? And I took him to Proverbs chapter 3. And I said, you need to read it. You need to understand what you're reading. If I didn't believe this, I wouldn't abide by it. I wouldn't live by its rules. I don't live by man's rules. Man's rules can be broken. God's rules can't be broken. Now, I meant that when I said, you may say, oh, yes, they can. No, you've just admitted that you break them. But they can't be broken. No, because when God really gives you his rules, we've already read the verse. He says, I'm going to keep them rules in you until. This is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. There's a certain attitude when retaining these teachings. Your disposition, this binding them, means never allowing those important factors to leave your life. Never. I don't have to go to church to open my Bible to live this. The psalmist put it this way, thy word have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against me. You will note the reference to the heart again. You see? Keeping the commandments, not only God will be happy, but everybody around you will be happy. And the effects of wisdom in the biblical text is seen in verses 5 through 12, which we know the most. You know, trust in the Lord, okay, with all your heart, and don't lean into your own understanding. See, it grows from there. But you can't get into verses 5 through 12 until you first deal with the verses 1 through 4. And most people never read verses 1 through 4. Because 1 through 4 demonstrates what your heart, what the heart of the true righteous person is really all about. That's what it does. I think that's all I wanted to share with you. I don't want to share with you more than that, because when we come back, we're going to look at another aspect. And I have to point out to this gentleman, I said, see, what you did is you used, because he tried to use a couple of verses there saying that whatever somebody does to me, I'm supposed to be forgiving and let it pass and let it go. I said, no, that's black religion. That's not God religion. That's some other modus operandi. That's not the way it's operated in the Bible. Not at all. Not at all. But I want to thank you for coming to my website as I recheck the spaghetti water, since I'm supposed to be eating, but now I'm cooking at the same time. Hey, thanks for coming to my website. Tell everybody that the webcast is up. Hope to be on time next time. God bless you. All right.